Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, good afternoon to all of my precious brothers and sisters in Christ Jesus, and welcome to another weekly edition of Is This the Church? With the one and only Sister AJ. Well, you know, last week the lights went out over here. We had a major snowstorm, wet snow, trees came down, lights, wires came down, electricity was down for 2 days. I was a popsicle for 2 days, and as a result, I have a cold. I have a lot of coughing going on and a lot of congestion. So you bear with me today. I'm always going to do my best, but I want you to know that I am under the weather only because that snowstorm was something else. Some people didn't have lights for 6 days. I didn't have lights for two. I cannot imagine having no lights for 6 days. But that just goes to show you how bad the infrastructure is in this country, particularly in the Empire State. Think about it. We're called the Empire State, and we can't even hold a few wires together. They better change their name. Best change their name. Well, we have a wonderful show in store for you. By the way, yesterday, Sister Marie was in studio, And we had a great show talking about the Church of Tears. If you missed it, was phenomenal. And today's broadcast is set up to be phenomenal. We're talking about Dallas Jenkins and his crazy series, The Chosen. And so let me bring on Sister AJ without any further ado. And let's just get this settled here. Let me bring her on. Hey, Sister AJ, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. You know, listen, when you're sick like I am, there's a few perks. I don't have to walk the dog. And if I don't have to walk the dog, I don't have to be out there because he fools around. He doesn't do his business, one, two, three. He's one of those dogs that he just likes to fool around. And so mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, and let me tell you, it's cold up here. It's cold. You look at the weather map, and it we're getting snow today. Can you believe that? We're getting snow.
Wow.
So it's cold. So one of the perks is that I get to play sick. And, you know, back in the day when I was a kid, I would put a thermometer on my mouth and go, oh, I don't feel good. You know, and then once my mom would say, okay, you can stay home, then, you know, I would turn on Let's Make a Deal with Bob Barker. And, you know, it was holiday for me. Boy, did I love that show, Let's Make a Deal. But so I don't have to walk the dog. And I don't have to do dishes because, you know, they got – when you're well in this house, when you're feeling well, they got you on a dishwashing rotation. Yeah, they got you on a – so I don't have to do laundry. I don't have to do dishes. You know, I just got to play sick. That's it. So but the bad side about that is that Mother Superior
over
here –
waiting when you get back.
Well, the thing is with her is if you're sick, she sets up appointments. You see? So that's the bad part. Yeah, that's the bad part because, okay, now, you know, I'm taking you to the doctor. Who wants to go to the doctor? For what? So I get miraculously healed, and then before you know it, I'm back on the dishwashing rotation. So, but I'm looking forward to today's show, and it's been an eye-opener for me, I got to tell you. I knew nothing of Dallas Jenkins. I knew nothing about this series. Not until recently. Like I said, the first time I heard of The Chosen outside this series that you're doing, I was driving mm-hmm. during the Christmas holidays. I was looking for a channel to listen to. There's a channel, a Christian channel here called Mars Hill Network, and that guy Greg Laurie was advertising The Chosen as a Christmas gift. That's the first time mm-hmm. I heard it outside your show. And then, of course, recently I bumped into a pastor who took me to his house, and he had all the Chosen Jesus junk all over his living room.
Wow.
And I said, wow, this guy has a museum here of the Chosen junk. And, you know, and of course, my wife has a friend that does a weekly Bible study, and she came with the wristbands. So mm-hmm. two people that I bumped into, and one. So other than that, I've never heard of the Chosen. I know that it's a phenomena out there, but, you know, I never heard of it, and I'm glad I did because it's just pure heresy. It's just pure garbage. So set this up for us.
Well, I think what you just said is a good segue. And for this week, for the last couple of weeks, we've kind of been looking at the behind-the-camera stuff, the business of The Chosen, who are the people behind it, and what, if anything, is their agenda. And so we've been looking at that angle because just as much as the show and the series and the episodes, as good as it was to examine those things, I think it's important to also know what's going on behind the scenes to try to give even more of a rounded view of what this show is, whether or not it's something that you should support with your time and money and all of those things. Is it something we should promote either because of what's going on in front of the camera or behind the camera? And does it even matter what's going on behind the scenes? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, when when Dallas brings on his friend, his partner, and they start talking about, we didn't mean to do this, our intentions were good, he got a text, and a father was telling him how his son was turned on to the show. You know, when you look, this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
This is, this for them is a moneymaker. That's, and here's the sad thing. Let's think about this for a moment. Let's think about this. We know that Dallas Jenkins doesn't have two nickels to rub together, because anytime you're a director or whatever, you're always looking for people to fund your projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does Brian De Palma get his movies done? Well, some big studio says, okay, this is your budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the way it works. You get some studio to fund you, and you get to do the movie. If it's a flop, then, you go your separate ways. But if it's a great movie, then they'll ask you to do a sequel or another project. So we
right.
know that Dallas doesn't have any money, to do any of this. He got Mormon Partners. Now, I don't know the extent of the Mormon partner side of it. I don't know how much money they put in, but I can tell you that they've been getting money from the saints of God
That's
through
right.
crowdfunding. So think about this. Is it any different than what Bernard, Master Prophet E. Bernard Jordan does when he tells people, I need 10 of you to send me $10,000 right now? Is that any different? And then
no.
he sits on top of the pyramid with his wife, and they get $100,000. And here you are, you're out of $10,000. Is it any different?
I don't see a difference.
No, there's no, and they call it a business. It's amazing to me that he is taking money out of the kingdom of God to promote his pet project, which is garbage, and then he's splitting the money with the Mormon guy.
Yes.
Right? So. Look. I like Marvel comic movies. I like Spider-Man. I like Captain America. Captain America is my favorite. The Falcon. I love the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Black Widow. I mean, I'm a Marvel fan, right? I grew up reading Marvel comics. Now, if Disney was to come to me and say, "Hey, bro, we want to do another Hulk movie. Would you support us?" I'll say, yeah, I'll support you when you make the movie. I'll go pay my ticket.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, I mean, I'm not sending you $50. I'm not sending you $100. I'm not sending you $200. I'll support you if the movie's okay, and if I like the trailer, I'll go buy my ticket. That's how I'll support you. But I'm not sending you any money. I'm not doing that. So Dallas is he is tapping into a financial base.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, they're not even going to Mormons for the money. They're going to Christians.
Yes.
I doubt that
That's
there are
right.
any Mormons giving this guy money. I doubt it.
You don't think so?
No.
Because I'm sure a lot of them like the show as well.
They might like the show, but the Mormons, I'm sure they are not Listen, the Mormon Church is not, in many respects, they are missionary-minded, because up and down my neighborhood, you'll see these two kids with black pants and a white shirt and an elder label on their shirt, and they'll knock on your door. So they are missionary-minded in a apostate sense, right? They will go door to door. They will sacrifice that way. But when it comes to cash, no. They are not like, you know, our churches, people are just used to giving money. It's just, it's like breathing.
Yeah, especially now, and not even being discerning about who you're giving it to or to what. And what I will say about what you were saying as far as the distinction with Marvel and those movies and The Chosen is that the Lord and who he is, and what his life was, why he came, what he did while he was here, has eternal significance. It's between heaven and hell, us understanding who he is. And when you have these movies and TV shows that distort that, it's devastating because, Dallas might be able to, as he says, presented what he says is an authentic Jesus to people, but it's not Jesus. It's not the right Jesus. It's not. They're not going to get the right idea of who Jesus is. And even if they go and read their Bible, what people will do who have embraced these characters as authentic, they will fuse what they see in the scriptures with these personas from the show. They think that's the real personality, and that's the danger of it, and that's the difference between a Marvel comic movie or some of the other stuff that we would look at as entertainment and something like this, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that if you take the Incredible Hulk and you make him gay, okay, he's, you know, you made the Hulk gay. But, you know, nobody's
looking.
I won't
want to watch that, but,
exactly.
You can do that.
I wouldn't want to watch it. You wouldn't want to watch it, right? Right now, there's a thing in the next Doctor Strange movie. It's already out there. Disney refused to take out 12 seconds of a scene where one of the characters claims that she had two mothers. And people are saying, take that out. And Disney says, I'm not taking it out. You see, so already they're polluting the product, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you can pollute the Hulk all you want because the Hulk is not my Lord and Savior. I don't, you know, he's not my Redeemer. Now, when you mess with Jesus, we're entering into a different conversation.
Right. This Jesus that Dallas is presenting may as well be a Disney product, because he can't save you from anything.
Exactly. So it's amazing that this guy has gotten away with. I'm just shocked. I'm just shocked. But he's got a good thing going there with the Mormons. And
so far, but I don't think Jesus is going to think it's very good.
Oh, no. See, it's not something you don't want to mess with Jesus. You don't want to tamper with Jesus. You know, you just don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. If you say David and Jonathan were gay and Ruth and Naomi were lesbians, of course that's wrong and that's falsehood. But when you say, you know, it seems to me like Jesus and John have something going because John would lie on Jesus' breast. Now you are, and it's not because you're talking about John, but it's because you're talking about Jesus. See, that's the problem. You're messing with God. incarnate. That's the issue. That's the issue.
Right. And I do have a little bit, saw an article that's kind of an update about last week with the billboard thing and that stupid commercial.
Right.
Just a little something I wanted to share really before we get into the videos. And this article is titled, This Billboard Was the Work of the Devil, in quotes. And then the subtitle, A Christian Television Show Badly Underestimated the Concerns of Its Audience or Understood Them All Too Well. So the spin on this article is that the staff there knew all too well what the reaction was going to be, and they counted on that, even the people mm-hmm. who were upset. And the article talks about stuff we already know, the billboards, the reactions from the fans. So I'm just going to read a couple things from the last part of the article. So
okay.
It reads, after it talks about all the billboards, the reaction, it reads, it was an interesting turn of events for the creators of this massive yet underground franchise who either underestimated or savvily played upon Christian ideas about religious persecution. A 2021 PRRI, I think that's Pew Research, survey of more than 1,000 Americans found that nearly 60% of white evangelicals said they believe there is a lot of religious discrimination against Christians. The chosen's Christian audience is already primed to believe that any Christian content would be subject to attack. Then it reads, it's possible Jenkins did not foresee the strong reaction. The Chosen isn't just for white evangelicals after all. So let's see, it talks about the people that like the show. And then the next paragraph it reads, but Jenkins, an evangelical, would be very, very familiar with how Christian audiences feel about popular religious content. His father, Jerry B. Jenkins, co-authored the wildly successful Left Behind series, which depicts born-again Christians left on earth after the rapture, battling the forces of the Antichrist amid the horrors of the biblical apocalypse. Possibly from his father's example, Dallas Jenkins learned that a Christian product needs to combat perceptions of Christian fiction by highlighting drama and toning down, so needs to court a bit of scandal. Okay, and then it talks about the success of the show. And I'm just going to drop down to the last paragraph because I thought it was interesting, which contains a quote from Dallas Jenkins, because he did an interview about this whole marketing camp. I'm going to call it scampaign.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So did Dallas Jenkins really make a quote-unquote big mistake with the billboards? A number of Christian and local news outlets have given the show free publicity by writing up the controversy, and according to Jenkins, viewership of The Chosen has skyrocketed since the ad campaign started on April 12th. I had to do a little bit of a sincere apology. This is a quote from Dallas. Because I think we missed the boat with our core fans, Jenkins said in an interview on Banfield. But the reaction from non-viewers, from people who are just discovering the show because of the campaign, has been actually extraordinary. And that's the end of the article. Now, what I think that they are playing into is there's this saying – that there's no such thing as bad publicity, and that even though the core fans may not like it, if you do it this way, they'll still talk about it. They'll still put things on social media. You get a few articles written about it. Dallas may do a couple of interviews, and you got, you know, people like us and even people who don't like what Dallas is doing will probably do some stuff on it, and it gets attention.
Right.
And so
right.
They claim there's no such thing as bad publicity, but once again, we talked last week about how their hearts are trained in covetous practices is about money, because
right.
The Bible does not say any publicity is good publicity. It, for one thing, it says, woe unto those that call good evil and evil good. But the Bible also says to us in Proverbs 22:1 that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches.
Right.
Loving favor rather than silver and gold. So to us as believers, the Lord wants us to have a good reputation, like what it even says, the qualifications for pastors. You know, you have,
right.
Have to have a good name. And
right.
It doesn't
right.
take but a second to mess that up, even if you spend a lifetime building a good reputation. So, but Dallas is embracing techniques that basically make you look shady.
Sure. Sure.
And that
sure.
can mess, and when we have a bad name, we besmirch the name and reputation of the
right.
Lord before people. So that's
right.
what I thought about when I saw this article. So
right.
what do you think?
I would say you hit it right on the head, and the best way for me to explain it is that Dallas Jenkins basically did what Jesse Smollett did.
Yes.
He created right a story, and of course, it wasn't true.
Because
that's what Dallas did. I mean,
with the billboard,
honest, right?
Yeah.
Right, and then you know, because Jesse Smollett wasn't getting any play. He was a small part actor. And then, you know, he became a household name after
right,
that.
That's true.
So Dallas figured, hey, you know, we can use a bump. We're kind of, you know, we're kind of dragging here a little bit. You know, maybe we're losing a little bit of momentum. And, you
well,
know, the consultant. Right?
Season 3 is not out yet. So they've
right.
got to do things to keep people interested until they start putting out episodes for the next season. So there's that,
right.
too.
Right. So, boom, here you go. And people are interested, and it gets back into the news cycle. And for a little while, you know, and here's the thing. You would think that the unsaved would be protesting the fact that you claimed that some of us came against the church or religious product or religious entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You created a false narrative about us attacking you.
Right.
Right? Because think about it. What if, let's just say what if, some hot-headed Christians would have gotten in the flesh with some people who are unsaved, and let's just say there would have been a scuffle, there would have been a fight, because you know people argue. I mean, I've seen families argue at Thanksgiving and Christmas over Trump and Obama. I saw that with my own eyes. I saw fists flying. I mean, I saw fisticuffs. Right? I mean, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. And I'm talking about even married people, right? So can you imagine, because, you know, people, some people love their Jesus and some people don't like to be accused of, you know, doing graffiti and you know, damaging a billboard you know, it could get hot.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if there something tragic would have happened from people in the community? Hey, look what they did. This is in our community. Who did this? And then, you know, they could have taken matters into their own hands.
You never know.
It could have backfired in some other ways.
Right.
So, and, you know, and then the other thing is it reminds me of the fairy tale, the boy that cried wolf. Why are you crying wolf? Maybe one day it will happen. Maybe one day, you know, they will deface, you know, some movie or some movie poster or some, you know, there might be a group who really, you know, but here you are crying wolf. And, you know, everybody in the town looked at the boy like, you a big liar. And then when the wolf did come, nobody paid any attention. So you don't play, see, you don't play with things like that. You know?
Right.
You just don't. Because, you know, there are people on both sides of the aisles that are very, very, very loyal to their position. And things get ugly when people get loyal.
Fan is just another word, is a short word for fanatic.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, look, these guys will do anything for a buck. They'll do anything.
Yes.
Listen, this is just me now. This is just me, okay? You know all these big organizations that do, when there's a disaster, they run and they help people. I believe, this is just me now, and again, you know, this is cynical me. I'm cynical, and I won't deny that. I believe that these people can't wait for hurricanes to come and floods to come and all that. Why? It's a big fundraiser. They start doing commercials. Send us money, and we will be there with your portable clinics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the money maker for these. They can't wait for a disaster. They just can't wait. It brings in the cash. Can you imagine being in ministry hoping for disasters so that you can fill your financial coffers again? Can you imagine having that kind of a heart and mind?
No.
But, you know, I saw it in the church. I mean, people just look, in Africa, they don't have water. Send us $10,000 and we can put in one pump, right? I mean, that was a moneymaker. Lots of people were doing that. James Robinson was doing that. What's his name caught on? Rob Parsley started doing that. It's a moneymaker. Oh, it's a money. It's, you know, so they come up with different projects, and they rake in the bucks. They're raking in. They're looking for misery, disaster, a shooting, you know, whatever, and they'll use it to, you know. That's why I was the advantage. Right. I was a horrible fundraiser. Horrible. Because I couldn't do that. I couldn't tell people, okay, I'm going to Jamaica or I'm going to India or I'm going here or there to do the Lord's work. Can you give us some money? I just say, hey, I put the money up myself and I just went and I did the work. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And there are all kinds of people just using these mission trips. I saw one guy, there was one pastor, he was raising money for mission trips, and he got like 20 airplane tickets, people to give to 20 of the church missionaries. Well, everybody went in coach, and the pastor and his wife went in first class. I mean, they, you know, everybody's back with the chickens, and, you know, at the back of the plane, and the pastor and his wife
and
are flying first.
The pastor's riding in luxury. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it's amazing. It's just, you know. So Dallas, yeah, Dallas is going to, and it's not the last creepy thing he's going to do. It's not the last.
I'm sure, because in their mind, this was successful. It accomplished exactly what they wanted it to accomplish. So it just shows that how people love to use and abuse the sheep, the Lord's sheep.
Right.
And
once
Dallas
goes
out
there,
captivated, they think they can just do whatever you want. And look at his church background with James McDonald. That's how James was, you know.
Yeah, listen, if you're a church member of James McDonald's church, I have issues with you. If you're a member of that church and you that's your path, I have issues, man. I have big issues. Because that guy is a wolf. I mean, he doesn't have a little bit of – he has no wool on him, none. It's all wolf fur.
None.
He just lets you know right off the bat what he's about, what he's into.
That's right.
So, McDonald had issues with porn?
No, he
– No, okay.
Well, he probably, I don't – that was Dallas.
No. But was his issue women or porn or what was his? What was McDonald's issue?
Complaints were his abusive, manipulative leadership style. He was very abusive to his staff and people that worked closely around him, in particular, and also financial malfeasance. You know, spending the way he spent his money. You know,
mm-hmm,
that now
mm-hmm.
who knows what other stuff, but that those aren't
things
that I read about in any statements that people put out. Because people wrote letters and detailed the things that he was doing.
Wow.
So I didn't see any of that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So listen, beating up on people, you know, blacklisting them and you know, telling them off. And abusing them verbally, you know, that's horrible. And, you know, spending the Lord's money like it was yours, that's also horrible.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I get them confused because all these, you know, some of these guys watch porn. It's like the people at Hillsong, they're caught up in sex scandals, right? Hillsong is the sex scandal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Well, the daddy.
I hadn't heard
that
about James, but who knows? Those just aren't things that have come out publicly.
Right. All right. Well, listen, like I said, you go to a bad church and you're under a bad pastor and you tout your relationship and you brag about your relationship with that pastor. Buddy, there's something wrong with you.
Well,
he's got the church
logo tattooed on his arm. Dallas, I mean.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. Here's the other thing I will tell you. Let's say somebody like Paula White. If you're Paula White and you got T.D. Jakes' son or daughter in your church, you treat them like royalty.
Mm-hmm.
But other people you would treat like dogs.
Right.
You know, like for example, I don't think McDonald would treat Dallas Jenkins bad because he's the son of Jerry Jenkins. So, you know, basically he's part of the aristocracy of the church, right? So those people you treat as your buddies. Oh, they're like, come on, let's go play golf together. And you treat them with kind words. But then when you look at the peons in the church, you're yelling them and telling them go back to picking cotton.
That's right.
So there's a two-tier system in the church. You know, you have the aristocracy, the people who are supposedly evangelical blue bloods, they're evangelical royalty, and you treat them and their kids like royalty, but everybody else you treat like garbage. I saw that so many times.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe Dallas went to a church with an abusive pastor, but he did not suffer abuse. Because,
no,
again,
I mean, Dallas eventually left that church, and he wrote a letter as well, but, you know, a lot of it was just things that he observed.
Right, right.
And he was part of the leadership, executive leadership, something
absolutely.
Or other there, and of course, head of the media ministry and stuff.
Absolutely.
So he had a position there.
Oh,
he
sure.
wasn't just the pew guy.
Right, right. No. Aristocracy. You see, it's aristocracy. You're part of the team. You're part of the leadership team. And, you know, and no doubt he learned a lot from McDonald, and he's saying, I'm going to do what McDonald did, because that's what he's doing.
Right.
He's surrounded with yes people. They rubber stamp every stupid thing he says, and every stupid thing he wants to do, they just rubber stamp it.
Yeah, so that's what I get. He may have taken on some of that persona, especially if he was already kind of like that anyway. He may have already been a bit of a jerk, but that then being with James didn't help.
Right. No, listen, you can tell Dallas, I told you this a long time ago without me hearing the other stuff. I told you he was spoiled. I told you his parents spoiled him rotten and never said no to him. Never said no. And that's why they can't say no now. And that's why he can't take criticism. He can't take criticism. He falls apart. He gets mad. He gets angry. He'll throw himself on the ground and have a tantrum.
And that's how James McDonald was. He was like a 2-year-old when he couldn't get his way.
I used to throw myself on the floor and cry, and my grandmother used to look at me and says, "You can cry all you want. Because one thing you can't do is you can't cry blood. You can't." So
hey,
she says,
would take us to the bathroom.
That's it. I would cry and carry on, and she would say, "That won't kill you. You don't cry blood." Now, in other words, what she was saying was, you just acting the fool. Now, if you were seriously hurt, I would run you to the hospital. But you just crying
right.
tears. You ain't crying blood. There ain't nothing wrong with you. You acting a fool.
Right.
You know, and that was it. That and my grandmother was she was a real tiny woman. But when she said no, it was no. There was no way you could. I remember one time I tried to crack open a Bible and try to get real spiritual so that she can get me, you know, so she could take away the punishment. And I'm reading out loud, and then, you know, I'm praying, and then I say, "Grandma, do you think?" "Nope, you're punished." That me cracking open the Bible didn't do anything, didn't move her. She knew what I was doing.
Yeah, it did work. Yeah, exactly.
Yep,
so.
That's it. Yeah, this guy, listen, it's about the cash, it's about the money, and, you know, prostitutes, they'll do anything. Prostitutes
yes.
will do anything, you know. It, for the money, for that money, oh, my goodness, what men would, you know, I see guys, think about this, Sister AJ, and I hate to bring this up, but here you got guys who want to be bishops. And they're asked to lie down on the ground on their stomach, and then another guy jumps on their back. Boy, you
yes,
gotta be real.
I remember
you
that.
You gotta be real desperate to want to be a bishop if you let somebody do that to you. I'm sorry.
And
that's what I mean.
In front of your wife, your kids, your family.
In front of the whole world, it was viewed on YouTube.
It was on YouTube, yes.
In front
Everybody
of the whole world.
Everybody saw him get emasculated.
Exactly, and so that's what happens when you prostitute, when you want something so bad that you'll say, okay, whatever you do to me is all right as long as I get it in the end.
That's
and you
right.
got nothing. You got nothing. But that's the way these people are. You know, they sign on the dotted line, do what they have to do to get, you know, whatever it is that they're being promised, which isn't much, by the way. It's not
nothing compared to eternity.
Right, right, right. All righty. So I have the first video loaded up.
Okay. And also, I don't know how far we're going to get. We may get to this today, but also keep the second audio queued up, because what we'll do is if we get to that point today, I'll need you to stop it. And we'll pause that and then go to another video that's going to share some more detail because he'll get to the partnerships and the business stuff. But this second video that I have gives some more detail on how Dallas and his Mormon partners got together. It's by the same lady that put out the video about the commercial, so I wanted to use some of his information. And it'll be about when we get to the hour, 1 minute and 37 second mark of the first video. That's where we'll stop it and go to the second one. Because, and we stopped at the 26 minute mark on audio one, The Chosen Exposing, which this young man did a phenomenal job of putting all this together. And I wanted to share this with the with our audiences. So hope.
Okay, so we stopped at that 26 minute, right?
Yeah, we stopped at 26 minutes.
All right. Okay, here it is.
And otherwise, I'm learning so much about your faith tradition. The stories of Jesus we do agree on, and we love the same Jesus. If God did something that was different from your expectations or understanding of Scripture, would you question God, or would you question your own interpretation of that Scripture? I did not know at the time that like when the guys at VidAngel and LDS were like, "Hey man, well done on that one scene. That's like an LDS commercial." And I was like, "Oh man, please don't say that publicly, because it's gonna kill me."
Man, I was hoping that was in there on purpose for us, but I mean, we'll take what we can get.
Sorry. Hey, yeah, you got. I'm already partnered publicly with many LDS people. One thing at a time, man. I that's all I can give you at this point.
That's fair enough.
Dallas Jenkins.
Well, you already gave them your soul. What do you mean, that's all I can give you right now? You sold out.
You gave them what's important already.
That's it.
You sold out.
That's all I can give you right now. No. Once you come under a pimp. I mean, once you come under a pimp.
He don't let you go.
That's it. I mean, that's it. You know,
you got to do what the pimp says.
Oh, man. This, wow. Wow. All right.
Jenkins claims that Mormons and Christians believe in the same Jesus, but that is totally 100% false. It almost raises the question, how can Dallas Jenkins even know Jesus Christ and make a statement like that? Because the Jesus of Mormonism is a totally different Jesus than the Jesus of the Bible and the Jesus of historic and sound theological Christianity. This topic can't even be debated. It's not even up for discussion. When you look at the clear teachings of the Mormon Church and the entire history behind it compared to the teachings of the Bible, it's clear that one is a cult and the other is the way to experience forgiveness, redemption, and salvation. Most people are unfamiliar with what Mormonism teaches, so I'm going to share some of their beliefs. I want to make it clear that all of the statements that I'm going to say about Mormonism are due to personal research and are clearly shown to be accurate from Mormon primary sources. Mormonism teaches that God the Father has a literal physical body. Mormonism teaches that God was once a man that followed the tenets of Mormonism to become a God. Mormonism teaches that there were many gods before the God of the Bible. Mormonism teaches that all humans had pre-existence and are spirit brothers to Jesus and Lucifer. Therefore, Jesus and Lucifer are spirit brothers. In their official church doctrine, they teach that the Bible is errant and that the Book of Mormon is more accurate and correct than the Bible. When it comes to their view of atonement, they have a totally distorted view. They believe that the sin of the world was placed upon Jesus at Gethsemane as opposed to the cross. They also believe in the universal salvation of all people due to the death of Jesus Christ on the cross. Well, how does that last one work? Well, they believe that there are three levels of heaven. The highest level is where somebody progresses towards godhood and then receives their own planet where they can produce babies for eternity. Is there hell in Mormonism? Well, they call it outer darkness, and only those that are apostate Mormons go to outer darkness, which is insane. That means that Hitler has a better eternal experience than a person that forsakes Mormonism. Talk about a control factor and fear factor in order to keep somebody part of a cult. Mormonism teaches that all humans once had pre-existence, and that the purpose of life is something called eternal progression, which is people becoming gods that eventually inhabit their own planet and be the god of their own planet. It's clear that Mormons deny the Trinity. They deny original sin. There's actually a level of universalism in Mormonism because they believe that the atonement of Jesus Christ actually brought about immortality for all people. However, godhood, what they call exaltation, is only available to those that practice the tenets of Mormonism and get pretty much as close to perfect as possible doing so. So, clearly Mormonism believes that there are many gods. You know, one of the biggest ways to know that something is a cult and a heresy is to look at how it views the atonement. Mormonism actually denies the atonement of Jesus Christ on the cross. Mormons actually believe that their current president, which in history were their current prophets, actually have infallibility when it comes to matters of doctrine. Now, the real tricky thing is that when you look at the history of Mormonism, there's been all of these crazy different things that different prophets have said. So current-day Mormons will often say, well, those things we don't adhere to today, and it's convenient because, hey, the current prophet says, I guess God changed his mind. In their scriptures in Moroni 10:32, which is in the Book of Mormon, it actually says that we're supposed to come to Jesus, and we have to pretty much rid ourselves of all ungodliness. And if we deny ourselves of all ungodliness, then the love of God might give us the strength that's necessary in order to reach godhood. Then God's grace is sufficient after we've done all of the work. So that's a different gospel. One is a gospel of grace, which is the true gospel, and the other gospel is a gospel of works, false gospel. Brigham Young, who was the second prophet after Joseph Smith of Mormonism, actually believed that God the Father had physical sexual relations with Mary. I mean, that's some sick stuff. So when Dallas Jenkins says, oh, you know, all of our disagreements are pretty much about things after Jesus came, well, that's actually 100% false. A lot of it is pre-Christ. A lot of it has to do with what they believe about the very nature of God, the very person of God, the very nature of sin and man's sinfulness, the very nature of Satan. If this doesn't get you, I'm going to say that you probably really need some spiritual help. Many Mormons believe that Jesus was married, and different leaders throughout the past 150 years of Mormonism have believed that Jesus was married. And the reason why they believe that is because marriage is an essential part of progression towards godhood. So though not all Mormons will say that Jesus is married, and though not all the church leadership today may say that Jesus is married, it's widely held that Jesus is married. If you put much research into Mormonism and read different texts from the Book of Mormon, you'll see this high emphasis on works. Everything is works, works, works. It's God's grace is given after you try your very best. But we know that that's a false gospel. That's not what Jesus came to give us. He didn't come to give us a works-based religion. He came to offer us grace and mercy through his atonement on the cross. So no matter how you get around this, Mormonism and Christianity are totally incompatible. Different Jesus in each. Different Jesus in Mormonism, different Jesus in Christianity. So this idea that we can come together and find collective agreement over the Jesus that's portrayed in The Chosen is not acceptable. It's not true. I know some people are going to watch this and say, Mormons don't believe this, and maybe even some Mormons who may be watching saying, we don't believe that. I challenge you, look at your primary sources. The research that I've done for this is not me making it up. I've looked and researched, and this is what Mormonism teaches. This is the official doctrine of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You'll hear Dallas Jenkins say time and time again when he's on Mormon interviews, our differences are more about what happened after Jesus was here than before. But that itself is totally false. When you look at the founding of the Mormon Church, it was founded by Joseph Smith, who was a false prophet, a false teacher, an adulterer, a liar, and on top of that, he was a Freemason. So when you look at the full scope of Mormonism, there's no way that anyone can ever be a Mormon and believe in the Jesus of the Bible. No way whatsoever.
And yes, Joseph Smith, the founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, was a Freemason. Joseph Smith's brother Hiram was also a Mason and a member of a lodge in Palmyra, New York. And their father, Joseph Smith Sr., was also known to be a master Mason in Canandaigua, New York, as early as 1818. While prophet and president of the church, Joseph joined the Masonic Lodge in Nauvoo, Illinois on March 15, 1842. Rising to the level of Master Mason just a day later under the recognized authority of the Grand Master of Illinois. Masonry wasn't new to the thousands of Latter-day Saint converts already living in and around Nauvoo at the time. Although new to the faith, some members of the church, even those within the ranks of church leadership, were already Masons.
Joseph Smith became a Master Mason in March 1842 and then administered the first endowment a few weeks later in May 1842. In one way or another, Freemasonry absolutely influenced Joseph as he put together the endowment.
Yeah, and I think I'm seeing a lot in the LDS community, which per capita is probably the biggest fans of The Chosen anywhere. When I go to Utah,
really,
that's the one place where I'm a bit of a celebrity is. It's really the show has become huge in the LDS faith, and partially also because we filmed some of season two at that amazing set in Goshen, Utah, that's owned by the LDS Church.
I don't think God's gonna send me to a lake of fire and brimstone because I didn't go to the right college. I was going to the wrong church. I was doing that. He is, I don't want to be around a God like that. I mean, if he's like, you know what, you're a good person, you lived a good life, but sorry, you went to the wrong place. Dad, I think that's a little harsh, don't you?
You missed 0.47 out of the 52 points that I gave. Therefore, you're
right.
Yeah.
When I first saw
Glenn Beck, a loon, another loon, yeah, the guy is in bed. Don't call yourself an evangelical. Just call yourself a Mormon. That's what you are now. You're a Mormon.
Or an atheist or something. But they're talking there. Glenn is talking. They're making light of Jesus's or God's judgment of sin. And he's saying he wouldn't want to be around God, a God like that. But Jesus talked about eternal punishment and hell all the time when he was here. And then the things that he discusses with John in the book of Revelation, Jesus is the God that will punish us, punish the unrighteous, and send them, put them in the lake of fire. So he doesn't want Jesus then. Right?
No, he doesn't want the biblical Jesus. He doesn't want, and that's why when Dallas says the authentic Jesus, dude, what are you talking about? What in the world are you talking about? First of all, you do not have a monopoly on the authentic Jesus. You don't.
No.
He's not yours. He's not yours. Jesus belongs to all the faithful. He belongs to all of us. He's not yours. For you to say we preach the authentic Jesus, we're presenting. What are you talking about? I mean, that is so stupid. That statement alone is, I mean, where have you been? Have you read a book on church history? My goodness. I mean,
probably
you need to tell
not.
Me that the people that said, okay, throw me to the lions, they didn't have the authentic Jesus? I mean, this guy is
authentic,
clueless.
Authentic, the real Jesus is the only Jesus that helped them be able to endure that persecution and torturous death.
Right. So, no, this guy, he thinks it's like Jimmy Swaggart. Listen, Jimmy Swaggart is a cult leader for obvious reasons. I mean, only he preaches, only his wife, only Donnie, and only Gabriel. Only the four Swaggarts get to do anything. You know that when it's only the family, you're in a cult. That's number one. Number two, Swaggart for years kept saying, I'm the one that only preaches on the cross. Dude, are you stupid? I mean.
Yes. He's hooked a lot of people with that teaching.
Right. I'm the only one who's preaching on the cross. What? I mean, think about all the people that ever came to Christ in the last 2,000 years. They can only come to him through the preaching of the cross.
That's right.
So that means that all those people who were saved aren't saved under Jimmy's, evaluation, because he's the only one that's been preaching on the cross. Therefore, only his converts are real converts. That's a cult.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's cult talk. When you claim to have an exclusive monopoly on something, now you're a cult. Because
right.
that's what the Jehovah's Witnesses teach, that they're the way.
Mm-hmm.
Pentecostals do not teach that they're the way. They point to Jesus as the way. Baptists don't
Jesus
say we're
the way.
They point to Jesus as being the moment you start saying, I have the keys. There was a guy who ran family radio. What was that guy's name? Harold Camping. He ran a big time radio ministry called Family Radio. And three times he hoodwinked the people, three times on three different occasions. He told them that Jesus was coming back. He did the calculations and all that. Jesus didn't come the first time. He was mildly embarrassed. The second time, he was mildly embarrassed. The third time, I mean, people sold their houses. People sent money to Family Radio so that they can buy tracks to warn people. And Harold Camping and his wife were up in some hotel waiting for Jesus to pick them up. And the next day, nothing had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all those people that listen to Family Radio have figured out they should have figured it out the first time they were duped. But it took
you
them three
to
times
to
get duped. Right.
To be a false prophet.
They followed this guy three times.
Mm.
Jesus said, no man knows the day nor the hour, but Harold Camping says, no, I know, because God told me. The moment you start claiming exclusivity, you have a cult mindset. See? So
that's
when he says, I have the, we're presenting the authentic Jesus, I mean, you are a moron. You're a moron. I'm sorry. That is so moronic.
More likely
you?
A liar. Because does Dallas
what?
Really not know this stuff? Or it just seems like he's just being deliberately deceptive more so than completely ignorant of certain things.
Right. Right. No, this is a – I would never get in a pulpit and say, you know, I have the exclusive word on this. I would never say that. Because now you know I'm off my rocker.
Mm-hmm.
This is why God handed a Bible to everybody. And he says, no scripture, no prophecy of scripture is of any private interpretation. No one person,
right,
by their lonesome is going to get illumination. God gives illumination to the entire body. The Bible is for the entire body. The moment you start claiming you got it and everybody else doesn't have it, now you know you are a cult leader.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we, as people, as the church, we need each other. We need each other. And not to do a TV show like Dallas and his three worthless consultants who, you know, don't say anything when obviously everything is wrong. We need each other,
right,
because we need to speak the truth in love when the truth in love needs to be spoken.
Right.
That's
iron sharpens iron.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Here's more.
Dallas Jenkins and Glenn Beck in this interview, I thought this is really troubling because right now they're joking about the holiness of God. You can see them both kind of chuckling and saying, like, yeah, God shouldn't send you to hell for a small mistake. But the thing is, in Christian doctrine and in biblical understanding of God's very nature, one sin is enough to separate us from God. Missing one point out of the 52, like Dallas says, or 51, whatever he says, is enough to bring separation between us and God. So one sin leads to an avalanche of choices that lead to an entire life departure from God's plan and will for a person's life. So because of that, this is really troubling that they're just joking about it. And when I see the cavalier attitude about the holiness of God that Dallas Jenkins portrays here, it begins to show how he's approaching the show.
An interview that you recently did with a nice lady wanted to start this interview off by just from the bottom of my heart thanking you for how you handled that.
I'm not trying to be mean, but that was literally one of the worst interviews I have ever seen. I've never seen somebody that has acted so much like a fan when they were trying to interview somebody about some really important questions. And if you watch the interview, the questions didn't get answered. Melissa actually answered a lot of the questions for Dallas Jenkins before he even got the opportunity to express what's really on his heart. So it really, sadly, was not a good interview. And we see that from the LDS perspective, they're happy about the way that Dallas Jenkins handled it, which just goes to show that no truth was really brought to light through that interview.
But I don't believe that my LDS friends or my Catholic friends or my Greek Orthodox friends or my Jewish friends or my evangelical friends, and that's the key, or myself, have the monopoly on criticizable theology or have the monopoly on a need for the Savior. But LDS, Catholic, agnostic, atheist, all stripes of the spiritual or lack thereof rainbow. And there seems to be this perception that I'm supposed to take advantage of every opportunity I have to not only share my faith and not only portray the Jesus of the Gospels, but to counteract, argue with, point out the wrong.
Yes, that's absolutely 100% what God expects of you, to defend the truth and to stand for the authentic Jesus.
And I just don't believe, A, that that's my role. I believe my role primarily is to accurately portray the authentic Jesus to a billion people around the world.
Which he hasn't done that.
It's not an accurate portrayal of Jesus.
Right.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. It's not accurate, and that's not the authentic Jesus. I can't find a Bible verse where Jesus was passing gas. Show me one Bible verse. No. Okay? And again, for me, if I was teaching a class on Christology, on the doctrine of Christ, and a student raised their hands and said, Professor, teacher, do you ever believe that Jesus passed gas? I would just say, next question, please, right? Because the question is irrelevant as far as salvation. right or wrong. I mean, okay, but
right.
But now that you bring it up, and we're only bringing it up because you present Jesus that way. So what? Jesus talked to you and told you exclusively, this is what I did? Right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
So, again, he is so off base. I want to present the real Jesus, the authentic Jesus to the whole world, the Jesus in the four Gospels. Dude, the four Gospels are scrambled.
His depiction, for sure.
Right. You ask any kid who goes to Sunday school, Jesus spoke about blank Samaritan. Every little hand's going to go up, the Good Samaritan. No, the only moron, the only Charlie Brown in class lifting up his hand and saying the bad Samaritan is him.
Yes, because that's what showed in the that episode was the thief. There was no good Samaritan in his show. Dallas highlighted the ones that attacked the guy on the road.
Right. A Nicodemus that isn't even the Nicodemus of the Bible. A whimpering Nicodemus. A hempecked Nicodemus over there in the corner with his back up against the wall, crying, and Jesus said, he almost made it. But grab the gold. Don't forget the gold, Peter. No.
Exactly. How much we got there, Matthew?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew, I want you to come and help me do my speech. Come on, Matthew. Come on. I want you to help me. Come on. This is...
And just a reminder on where we need to stop it, because we're getting kind of close.
Okay.
It's about 1 hour, 1 minute, and 37 second mark. We can stop this.
Okay.
That many LDS folks and I love the same Jesus. I still believe that. I have a bit of a superpower in that I don't really care. If something that I say that I passionately believe is criticized, they're working really hard to get this show out to the world. And so if it's part of some really big con, it's a really bad one. Because
you better use those superpowers when you stand before Jesus on Judgment Day. That's when you're going to need those superpowers.
I don't think they'll help him, bro.
Yep. Because he can use his superpowers against me. That's for sure. That he won't have a problem against me. But you're not going to be able to use them against Jesus.
He can blow me off and make jokes, but Jesus will not be abused.
That's right. Absolutely.
Part of our plan.
Yeah, it would be. You're doing a really poor job of it. So much of my relationship with the LDS folks has been absolutely beautiful, and we've all been unified in the Jesus that I'm portraying. The notion that they believe in a completely different Jesus is foreign to me, because what happens with the Chosen is it unifies millions of people all over the world, Catholics, LDS, Evangelicals, Greek Orthodox, whatever. I just personally believe that is happening in every faith tradition. There are people who believe in something false, including my own. And that's including myself. I'm certain that I am wrong about some things.
Sometimes you have to ask, Lord, is it I? I don't think I'd change a dang thing.
I just want to point out that Dallas Jenkins gets really emotional here when this LDS podcaster points out that he wouldn't change a thing about the show. Dallas Jenkins bites his lip. His eyes start to water. He even puts his fingers up to his eyes.
I love it. I think it's great. I think the Jesus that is portrayed is great. I don't know if that is going to bring comfort to people that are concerned about this issue or make them even more terrified that we've, flipped things in there. But
I don't really honestly know. There's not a whole lot of things in the gospel that I can think of other than perhaps certain beliefs about when Jesus took on the sin of the world, whether it was in Gethsemane or whether it was on the cross.
Hmm. The issue of Jesus taking on the sins of the world, that seems like a very small issue to me. Oh, yeah, you know, like what Jesus said, a couple of the little things that Jesus said. I mean, if you watch Dallas Jenkins and a lot of the interviews he does, he has a way of minimizing things that are of utmost importance and either minimizing them through exaggeration or minimizing them by just blowing it off. Everything that Jesus said is vitally important. The issue of when Jesus dealt with the sins of the world and how the atonement actually takes place and what the atonement represents and means is of utmost importance to the entire message of the gospel. It's a foundational pillar. So what he does here is he makes it seem like, oh, you know, Mormons have a little different view, and, you know, Christians, we have a little different view, and really it's just baloney to make that kind of comparison.
Some of those types of things, like what Jesus meant by a couple different things.
The Chosen has come to Utah.
Yeah, the Evangelical production is filming season 2 on the Jerusalem set belonging to the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints.
I actually felt a spiritual connection here. Yeah, I get this text, and it says, Goshen is a go. And, yeah, I cried. I mean, I called up my partner, and he happens to be LDS, one of my partners in the project. And there is a location here in Utah that we had wanted and thought would be amazing, but it didn't seem like it was possible. It's this unbelievable recreation of Jerusalem, but it hasn't been used by outsiders, and people started feeling led just out of the blue. They would wake up in the morning and feel led by God to talk about the show with other people. This has been prayed over and how this place has been built, and now we have an opportunity to make use of it. So
We all know President Nelson's watching it with his family on Saturday nights. I would not be surprised whatsoever. But anyways, yes, there's no formal endorsement. Got it.
Right. And, you know, of course, we are the first non-LDS organization or people to ever use this set in 10 years. But the Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency, those are the terms that I think I've learned.
Yes.
I set foot on that set, and I felt the presence of God, and I felt like this is right.
You know, that is a very big issue, that Dallas Jenkins felt like he was experiencing the presence of God on the LDS set. In the videos that you're seeing and the videos that you're going to continue to see, he praises the set, and he praises it as this place of a great testament unto God, and that the people that built the set were doing it unto the Lord. But we know that when we see what Mormonism is compared to biblical Christianity, this set was not built as a place of glory unto God, but truly it's a place of deception. So that's the original intent behind it from a spiritual standpoint. This place is not a place of God's presence, a place of glorifying Jesus. It's a place to create productions, to pull people into Mormonism. And by the biblical definition of another gospel, Mormonism will lead people to hell.
But I really felt like God was laying it on my heart, like, lives are going to be impacted because of what you do here. And this is going to be used for a purpose that's going to impact the world. And I didn't know, you know, you never know when you believe you're hearing from the Lord, if it's you or it's your brain or if it's, you know, what you ate that morning or if it's God. But I just really felt strongly. And so we were told no. I was like, wow, okay, I guess I was wrong. That wouldn't be the first time. And there was a gentleman who is not a leader in the church, but who's very involved in the LDS church, who was woken up at like 5 a.m. and just felt like God was like a sledgehammer saying, call this elder who's in the 12 and tell him, like, talk to him about the Chosen.
If the guy that Dallas Jenkins is talking about could actually hear God would be saying with a sledgehammer, leave the Mormon church.
So he calls him up, and the guy said, you really need to watch the Chosen. You really need to check this project out. He goes, oh, I actually have that DVD on my desk right now. And I'm walking out of my office right now to leave for the month, and I'll just take this DVD with me. Someone had given him the DVD. So he took it with him. Apparently, he's quite advanced in years, I'll say. And a bit, but still. Yeah, that doesn't narrow down. So, but he binge-watched the entire first season in 5 hours. He called up a couple other elders and said, we need to be involved in this somehow. Like, we need to, like, from what I've heard, they want to use the set. We need to listen. We need to hear them out. This is, again, this is during the month of July. So I was granted an audience with two of the top leaders in the church. And I just said right off the bat, I mean, this is what was so great about the conversation, is I just said, look, I'm an evangelical. I don't, like, because a few people who heard that I was going to get a chance to talk were like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you have this opportunity. And I just said to them right off the bat, I said, look, I don't, you know, you can only go downhill from here because everything I've heard about you is too good to be believed. So I'm sure that you can't live up to what everyone has said about you. And as an evangelical, I don't know enough anyway. So I hope that's okay. And I mean, they were just so great and so gracious and funny and appreciated some of my, I don't know if it's authenticity, if that's what you want to say, but my nature, I guess. And we just had a really great conversation and prayed together and connected. And they just felt good about it and recommended it to the first presidency. And we got a yes the very next day. But I know that in the leadership, that I know that they felt comfortable with our hearts and our mission, and that we have the same mission, which is to make the authentic Jesus known to the world. And this show, I believe, they believed, is worthy of having the word spread about it, and worthy of, and it is a testament to service to God. I mean, the people who built that set, the people who volunteered for it, the designers, the people who steward it, are doing it for the glory of God, and I feel fortunate and grateful to be a part of it. And now this place is going to be 12 stones. This place is going to be an example for when people see a place like this, or when they see season two and potentially future seasons in the future, that we'll be able to point to how God was so faithful. And you had a big hand in that. You prayed, and this is what happened.
Dr. Dallas Jenkins were among the crowd at the Pope's general audience in Paul VI's hall. Rumi plays Jesus Christ in The Chosen, a multi-season TV series directed by Jenkins. When it was their turn to greet the Pope, Rumi asked Pope Francis to bless some rosaries. Then the actor assured him of his prayers. A smile materialized on the Pope's face when Rumi told him of his role as Jesus in The Chosen.
Tengo el honor de interpretar el rol de Jesús en la serie televisiva.
Si el inicio se encuentra, se queda feliz.
Then the series director Dallas Jenkins introduced himself, and the Pope couldn't hold back his sense of humor.
No. But I am Protestant, but I am making a show for everyone who loves Jesus.
So. Dallas Jenkins and Jonathan Rumi were invited to Rome to have a semi-private meeting with the Pope. Now, something that I think is extremely concerning is that the Pope actually had a Caiaphas moment. And if you don't know what a Caiaphas moment is, it's taken from the part in the Bible where Caiaphas says it would be better for one man to die than the nation to be destroyed. And what many biblical scholars see is that Caiaphas, though he was not a godly, righteous person because he was rejecting Jesus Christ, he was rejecting the calling of God to believe in the Messiah, the Holy Spirit in that moment actually spoke truth through him. And so what ends up happening is, even though the Pope is part of a system and an institution that's totally not of God and totally separating people from God through religion and tradition, something really crazy to think is that the Pope said Dallas Jenkins is Judas. He's joking with him, and, you know, everybody's trying to make light of it. But that's a pretty big deal, that you have the opportunity to meet the Pope. And even though I don't believe the Pope has any kind of prophetic ability from God, in that moment he spoke a true word, that what's happening here with Chosen is really a Judas moment in Dallas Jenkins' life, because it's not the authentic Jesus being portrayed. And you're going to see throughout this entire video, through the yoking together with Mormons in the distribution company and even the ownership of the show, all the way to the uniting of different faiths that are not Christian. You'll even see in one of the Mormon podcasts that Dallas Jenkins was on, the host is joking, saying, sometimes you just have to say, Lord, is it I? which is exactly what Judas said.
Well, here I am. Front row, waiting for the Pope. Literally, a child in dream come true. And, no worries.
But this is a big deal because it, for me, it represents two things that are important. One is the branching out of the show to the world. And then another one is the branching out of the show to people and traditions that I wasn't part of. So it shows that the walls are coming down. I've been in Christian media for a long time. I've never seen a project that united the faith tradition. So it's just a cool experience. Recognizing us and thanking us for the show, and you're a big part of that. So the opportunity for other faith traditions to experience the show is not something that I necessarily planned for, but it's I didn't think I'd become have an opportunity here to meet the Pope and to get to experience this amazing city, Rome. But it's certainly quite an honor and something that represents just how far the Chosen is reaching.
While Jonathan Rumi was in Rome, he visited the body of Padre Pio, and here he talks about his admiration for this man. He talks about how he was a powerful person of the 20th century, and he says that he's even had personal interactions with him. He then ends the post encouraging people to pray to Padre Pio.
I'm a TV actor in the United States, and I play Jesus in a TV show called The Chosen. Yeah, and now it's being released worldwide. And there's over 200 million episodes that have been watched in the series. Because I'm playing Jesus, I think. Yeah, and because I love the Pope. And this was a huge honor to be able to be here.
Once we did the first season of The Chosen, I said to Dallas Jenkins, the creator of the show, I said, I'm going to get this show in front of the Pope. And he's like, in front of the Pope? I said, yeah, what do you think of that? Good luck. I said, And then about a year, 2 years ago, I was being interviewed by a journalist for, I think it was National Catholic Register. And, yeah, give it up. And I told her this in the interview, and she said, you want the Pope to see the show? I said, yeah, I think he'd like it. I think he'd dig it. She's like, huh, okay, let me see what I can do. I said, what? She's like, let me see what I can do. I'm like, okay. And then a year later, she's like, so I've been talking to the Vatican about you meeting the Pope. Get out of here. Come on. She said, no, they're interested. About 8 months ago, she says to me, so it's going to happen this summer. I said, you're kidding me. She said, no. You're going to have a semi-private audience with Pope Francis. And I said, okay. You know, and like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, sure. I believe it when I see it. But she's like, you need to get some letters of recommendation from, like, some of the famous bishops you know, like Bishop Barron. You guys know Bishop Barron? Bishop Barron's a rock star. And so I did. I got a couple of letters. They sent it out. And then I think it was in June. They gave me the audience for August 11th. And then we met him. And it was amazing. And he was funny. At one point, Dallas and I were standing there, and Dallas is telling him he's the creator of the show about Jesus that I'm in after I had introduced myself to the Pope. And Pope says, looking straight at Dallas, he's like, so he's Jesus? He said, yeah. And you're Judas? He said, yeah, no, not Judas, not Judas. Yeah. So, and that would really tickle Dallas. He really had a great experience meeting him, and didn't expect him to be so witty and warm, and he's everything you'd think he'd be. He's pastoral, you know? So.
That's amazing. On the Security and Exchange Commission website, all publicly traded companies have to show information pertaining to the internal workings of the company. We see here the three executive officers. First, Daryl Eves is the CEO of The Chosen. Daryl Eves, a Mormon, is the CEO of The Chosen. Next, we have Dallas Jenkins, who's the chief creative officer. And after that, we have Adam Swerdlow, who is the chief operations officer. Now, the issue is that Dallas Jenkins is the only one there that's professing biblical faith in Jesus Christ. Daryl Eves is a Mormon, and Adam Swerdlow is a non-believer. He's irreligious.
So I have a lot of good friends who we just agree not to talk about religion or politics because we care about each other so deeply, but we're so divided on those issues that we cannot see past them, and we'll go in circles and circles and circles arguing with each other. So we've agreed just not to talk about those things with each other in the hopes of just, you know, maintaining our relationship and just loving each other for who we are, not what we believe in. You know, we didn't agree on religion at all. I grew up very non-religious. My mom was Roman Catholic, and she really didn't like I don't want to say crazy, but how strict that religion was. And so she didn't, you know, require me or my sister to grow up with any religion. I also have a Jewish part of me, my father's side, and I grew up more, you know, just spiritual than anything. And Shailene is very Christian. Well, compared to me at the very least. And we, you know, I tried to, you know, I kind of like forced my beliefs on her, and she never did that to me, and it became an area of conflict for us. But, you know, at the end of the day, I cared so much about her, it didn't matter what she believed in. And I just want to support her. That's all that matters to me, is supporting my wife. Just being open to...
Well, I think that there's something so beautiful about all religions. You know, every religion has something beautiful to learn about, and I think the common denominator is love in every religion. So I think that's beautiful, and I think that that's what all religion, you know, stands for, is treating people with love, because God is love. And whatever you believe in, I'm sure that that's the same concept with any religion, is love. And I think that's what the world needs most right now, is love.
Regardless of what you believe in.
Yeah, regardless of what you believe in.
Guess what? There are great people who believe in God. There's great people who don't believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's bad people that believe in God, and there's bad people who don't believe in God. But I think everybody...
Learning to love everybody.
For who they are, what
they
represent, and what they believe in.
Right.
Who?
All we need is love. Love. That is all we need.
Yes. Oh, man.
Wow. Wow, what a train wreck.
One of Dallas's business partners. He's one of the co-owners of the Chosen LLC. They just showed the top three on the paperwork, but he's one of the business partners as well. And basically a lot of what this speaks to is ecumenicalism. And Dallas was actually expressing in those clips that we heard where they were visiting Rome, some of that where it wasn't much dialogue or commentary, that's mm-hmm. what he was showing those scenes
right.
for our audience as to what was going on. And it had Jonathan Rumi, which is Jenkins Jesus, talking,
mm-hmm.
and then and Dallas, and they were hobnobbing with people outside the Vatican, talking up the show. And Jonathan, or Jenkins Jesus, is very important because he's the Catholic face to this. And as
right,
he
right.
heard, he was telling the story about how they got to meet the Pope in the first place, and it was because of his Catholic connections.
Right.
So that's what we were listening to there in some of that last little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, again, this just goes to show you that Dallas is pitching. And, you know, whenever you hear somebody saying, you know, we honor all the faith traditions, you already know
mm-hmm.
they're an ecumenical agent of Satan.
That's right.
All.
That's right.
That's, you know,
that's
so
right.
That's what they're into. And, you know, that, listen, it's called prostitution. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
It's called prostitution. This is why
and how
the great harlot.
Licking the Pope.
Yeah, the great harlot of Babylon. People are drinking out of her cup.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're all
yeah.
they're all drinking out of her cup. And it's about, you see, for Dallas, it's about the money. It's about the money. And, of course, look, he likes the fame. He likes the fact that he's going to reach a billion people. He likes that. It feeds his ego. He's a prideful person.
Yeah.
All offense of our Lord and Savior, who didn't make a cent. Jesus never made a cent on his own ministry, and look at what these people are doing.
Mm, yes.
Right?
Yes.
All for money.
Yeah.
For money and fame.
Dallas Jenkins is basically prostituting himself. You got got the dime, he's got the time.
That's it. That's it. It is what it is. Tell me who you hang out with, and I'll tell you who you are.
That's right.
Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. Well, we have audio number two already loaded.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go to that. And the first section, we'll just listen to a few sections of it. The first
mm-hmm.
one we can get started with today, just started from the beginning. And we'll stop it at 16:37.
Okay. Now it says here, as I started, this is a biblical evaluation of the television series titled The Chosen. The
right.
review is titled The Counterfeit Chosen, because the series is both a fictitious representation of the scriptures and a rejection of God's command that we should not add man's ideas to God's word. Secondly, The Chosen
mm-hmm.
is a Mormon production from beginning to end, as you will learn.
Right. And it's the same lady that made the video about the commercial.
Right. Okay, it's rolling, so.
This series is, and this is nothing, I'm not here to preach to you, or I'm not here to do anything, I'm just kind of explaining the project, but we actually did a TV series on the life of Jesus Christ, but through the perspective of the people that surrounded him and his disciples, and the TV series called The Chosen. You can find it at thechosen.tv.
The Chosen has become the king of crowdfunding, among TV and film. According to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, The Chosen LLC in 2019 reported that it had raised almost $11 million by what's called equity crowdfunding, thanks to contributions from initial investors, which ranged, the estimates are that there was about 18,000 to 19,000 initial investors. The Chosen is a multi-season show, the first consisting of 8 episodes, and they just finished airing season 2, which was also 8 episodes, and it was fully funded as well. Now they are working on funding season 3. Episode 8 of season 3 has a goal of raising $2,250,000. The plan is to create 7 seasons, possibly 8, since Angel Studios has the exclusive rights for distribution. They control how it is platformed. Who's behind The Chosen? Who are the owners? There are 5 owners of The Chosen. Pictured here are 4 of the owners: Daryl Eves, Dallas Jenkins, Earl Fields, and Ricky Ray Butler. And the 5th owner is Matthew Faraci. Now, in 2017, they began the company, The Chosen LLC, which is a manager.
It all starts back in 2005. When I discovered YouTube. And I'll tell you what, when I discovered YouTube, I knew that this online video space was going to be huge, and I put a lot of energy, my money, and I also created a company that was designated to really get visibility and views, and it's been a wonderful ride. I've been able to get over 41 billion video views on YouTube. I've been able to help 21 channels, almost 22. We're getting really close to that 22nd channel, to get over 1 million subscribers each, and we're getting millions and millions and millions and millions of views each day. A couple years ago, it's been a long time ago, I was invited to go to a meetup, and this meetup was a group of individuals, and we was in a basement, and they were talking about this new opportunity of YouTube. And I ultimately met 30 other people there in that basement, and we started to try to help each other in our community. Now, this is in Utah. We call ourselves the YouTubers. We're a little original. It's UT-tubers, right? And in that core group, it was really fun to see all these YouTube channels starting to get experience. And as they get experience, they started to have success. And I can tell you the reason why there's so many different YouTube channels here in Utah is because of that group. It's because of 2 individuals that I know personally. First one is Jeffrey Harmon, because he took a risk and started to market a product that was unmarketable from infomercials and TV and print, but he was able to succeed here on YouTube. I've been on a quest for all those that have known me for all these years of really helping content creators really shine. I think we need to get a lot more quality content, content that families can watch. I know that Hollywood and other institutions like that don't really have that agenda at all. And I truly believe that, you know, socially and collectively, we need to band together, to group together with people with like-minded values and create content for ourselves or to amplify. So that's kind of been my mission, is to help select individuals, to help them really get found. But what happened with that is it literally shifted my focus. Instead of putting out a video content here or there, I really wanted to help other content creators. Now, that being said, I truly believe that where our society is going, we need to take it by the reins. Like, we need to start controlling, you know, the type of content that's created. And a couple years ago, I had a really good friend of mine, Jeffrey Harmon. He's one of the principals at VidAngel. He actually came to a conference I was putting on called the Vid Summit. Now, the Vid Summit, put on several years. It's going to be my sixth year this year. He came a couple years ago, and he's like, Daryl, I need to talk to you. I was surprised, first off, to see him, because he said he wasn't coming because he was too busy. And he basically says, I need to see you. And I'm like, Jeffrey, like, I know this is important, but I'm here to put on an event here. I can't drop everything. There's a lot of little details. And he says, no, I bought my ticket, and I flew down here today, so we need to have a conversation. And I am so grateful, first off, that Jeffrey was able to follow his heart and come down to L.A. Just kind of last minute and pull me into a room. And I remember vividly kind of fighting it because I had so much going on. And I was able to pull into the room, and it was great to see some of my amazing friends there, like Peter Hollins, and we had Ricky Ray Butler and a few others that were in that room. And to hear what Jeffrey had to say next. He says, you know, I wanted you all to come together. I flew down here to show you a video. It's about 19 minutes, and I want to talk about an opportunity afterwards. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? I flew down here to show you a video. It's about 19 minutes, and I want to talk about an opportunity afterwards. So he played this video, and it was a pilot episode of a shepherd that was witnessing the birth of Jesus Christ. And for me, I'm a true believer. I believe that Jesus came to save, and I just love him with all my heart. And when I saw the content, I was floored. And I remember vividly the part. I had someone coming in because there was an emergency going on and needed my attention. And I remember getting up. I said, Jeffrey, I got to go, but I know where this is going. I know where this is going, and I want to be a part of it. Wee hours in the morning, we were able to connect, and he was talking about this opportunity. And this is something that I was really excited about because Jeffrey and I worked on several projects before. He says, Daryl, you know, I bought my ticket, come down just to show you this video. And I have an idea. I have a crazy idea. And I'm like, oh, Jeffrey, not another crazy idea. I don't know if I can put up another crazy Jeffrey idea. He goes, no, it's really important. He goes, I really think we can disrupt how projects are funded. And we started to talk, and he was talking about a new way to get content creators that have the same values that we do, and the same, beliefs in the sense of family and country and loyalty and service, stuff like that. We can get that content out on a greater scale. And then he kind of opened up some ideas that he had, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. And the idea was, he was going to create a new division in VidAngel called VidAngel Studios. And this VidAngel Studios was all about, 100% was all about selecting content creators that can bring original content on the platform, but in the same time that they would actually get the crowd to fund their project and pull it in. Now, he had the idea to get it approved and go get approval with the Security Exchange Commission to receive public money and to bring investors in. And that was a new concept. And I was, like, really, really excited about that. That was a way for everyone that knows me, more that you know me, I love to disrupt things. And it was very disruptive. And I remember going up to Provo the week after. So I was honored to go up there. And then, too, a couple weeks later after that, I met Dallas Jenkins. Now, little did I know how that meeting would be and how it would change the course of my life, because it really changed the course. And I remember sitting down, we were just kind of in a room off the side, Jeffrey and Neil were there, and Dallas and I was there, and he says, "Well, we want to introduce you to Daryl, and we want him to be your partner, you know, and get things rolling." You guys kind of discuss between yourself, and I just remember seeing Dallas look like going, "What? Who is this guy?" You know, and we were able to sit down and talk about the vision and where Dallas is at in his life. Was he's willing to try anything. He says, you know, he just came off a complete failure in business and with Hollywood, and was open to really share his gifts, and he was willing to have someone that wanted to help. And I was really excited to be a part of it. I'll be honest with you. I was excited with his vision. His vision's very infectious, and he was able to talk about the type of content he wanted to create, which was a TV series on the life of Jesus Christ. And we were able to start strategizing. And before you know it, we started a partnership. And VidAngel is their distribution partners. They're not necessarily part of the company. But Dallas and I and Matthew Faraci, Earl Sills, and Ricky Ray Butler started a company where we were actually going to get this project out to the world. Now, keep in mind, Ricky Ray Butler was also in that basement, and you know, back with Devin Graham, and he's been able to bring YouTubers and online creators more money. He got his company bought by Bill Gates. There's a lot of great things that are happening. So we had a pretty amazing team. We went through the process to get approved with the Securities Exchange Commission to take public money. And I'm here to tell you, I would never wish that on my worst enemy to go through that process of working with the Securities Exchange Commission. It was arduous. It was like crawling on glass to get it approved. But we finally got approved, and we were able to prove a concept. And in last June, we were able to take public money through a way that hasn't necessarily been funded before in a what they call a Reg A offering, or bringing partners in. And it was a unique concept. And we started that in June, and we were able to get money in. And like for me and everyone that knows me and everyone that knows Jeffrey know that we're really motivated by, you know, achieving goals. And our main goal was to bust the world record, the all-time record in crowdfunding in television and film in media. And we were able to bring team members in, Ricky Ray Butler, Matthew Faraci, Earl Sills, to really bring in the money. And, you know, all of us together brought in money. And we put well over $1 million per episode into it. And what's great to see is the vision that Dallas had several years ago, and see it come to fruition. One of the things that we do consistently is, you know, we're able to read comments that people give us of how they're affected by the project. We read scripture, and we pray together. And it was a beautiful thing as Dallas offered the prayer and shared a story about how his wife, some very personal things that his wife was going through, and a close friend, and read some scriptures that were really relevant to me. And if this project alone, just with these little friendships that I was able to develop, and to really be surrounded by people that are like-minded, and to put out content out there to the world, I mean, I call it a win.
In his book, The YouTube Formula, Daryl Eaves reveals his strategy behind The Chosen. On page 149, under the section The Ultimate Unicorn, Jesus, it says, "Another project Jeffrey Harmon and I are currently working on, it's Jesus. I am more passionate about this project than any other I've ever done. We wanted to create a TV series about the life of Jesus Christ that appealed to the evangelical community. Jeffrey introduced me to a creator named Dallas Jenkins, who later became my partner and the writer and director of a series about Jesus Christ called The Chosen." The next page, page 150. "We knew we wanted to resonate our message and vision with a specific persona, 25 to 45-year-old female, married or unmarried, churchgoer, volunteer. The first show ever, the debut of The Chosen, begins with Jesus' first miracle. It was the healing of a woman, Mary Magdalene, who is called Lilith while she's demon-possessed. This episode slowly builds into a dramatic crescendo with Jesus casting out the demons in Mary Magdalene. The audience is taken through Lilith, or Mary's, traumatic past with flashbacks of the death of her father as a child, and then her mental and physical anguish as she is raped by a Roman soldier.
All right, let's stop it there because we only have a few minutes. This is so interesting. And what I find so interesting is, you know, the devil just has a way of just, you know, what's the secure, you know, what walking on glass with the Securities Exchange Commission when Satan owns the Securities Exchange Commission.
Right.
You know, he's going to give you the biggest platform you're ever going to need. He's going to get you the funding. He's going to get you the approval if you will globally distort Jesus.
That's right. That's right. And notice they said, she pointed out they wanted to do a show that, number one, appealed to evangelicals. These are Mormons now.
Right.
And the target audience were women of a certain demographic group. That's the devil's old trick bag. Go after the women.
Again, see, here's the thing. And I keep, how is it that these bishops live so large? Okay.
Women.
I'll give you the demographic. The same demographic that Dallas and his partners are targeting. It's the same women. Either unmarried or single with children. These are the same people that keep these bishops in their ivory towers.
T.D. Jakes is a great example of that.
Right. That, I mean, listen, and that's why they did the Mary Magdalene first episode, and that's why they have the poster, the artwork of her and Jesus. They didn't do a poster of Jesus and Matthew or Jesus and Nathaniel or Jesus and Peter. No, it's Jesus and Mary. It's
that's
a tear-jerking episode. It's a tear-jerker. Listen. Every Saturday, I sit down, okay, we're going to watch a movie. All right. So she starts with the tearjerkers. No, no. You and the dog can watch that. I'm not going to watch that. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be something we can, that or a musical, that or dancing, that or, you know, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. No. Or Sound of Music or West Side Story. No, I don't want to watch that stuff. Yeah, that's the demographic. That's the easy, you know. That's it. And listen, it's not that women are stupid. It's not that women are gullible in a sense. It's just that women love the Lord. That's the bottom line. The women that go, all the women that support these churches is because they really love the Lord. It just so happens that the pastor doesn't love the Lord. The pastor's a wolf, but they love the Lord. They want a relationship with Jesus. I'm sure that the women that watch The Chosen want a relationship with Jesus. But Dallas knows that, and the other people know that. And so what do? To get the thing off the ground and to get it supported, they get women to support it.
That's right.
And that should really tick women off. Because that's why they're doing it. Look, this little church that I'm pastoring, this little church that I started pastoring with 12, I think there were three guys in the church, the rest were women. Three guys. Three men. Or the bulk of the rest was women. Women really love the Lord. They love the Lord. And so these guys know that, and they take advantage of that. And that's why they target them. That's why they go after them. This is a great show. Great show, great audio. We got to get back to this. In fact, next week when we come back, we got to start all over again. This was really good. This lady does a great job.
Okay, we'll start with this one, and it's a couple more sections we'll look at, and then we'll go back to the other video we were looking. But this just expands and expounds on how Dallas and his quote-unquote partners got together, because Dallas likes to make us think that they he's the owner and controls everything, and they just distribute it, but that's not really the case.
Right. No. There's big money here. There's a big room in the back with people smoking cigars, and, you know, they all have pinky rings. They all have mafia pinky rings.
Drinking cognac.
That's right, and they're splitting up the pile of money. And they target women. They're targeting women. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Great show. You got the last word, my sister.
All right. Well, just as always, thank you so much for listening. Know that we love you. And most importantly, the Lord Jesus Christ loves you. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.